We are holding by the second Mishnah on Memtes on the day, last Mishnah of the Perek. Still talking about an Asherah. So the Mishnah says, Kesed Mevatla, how are you Mevatla? And, oh, well, you know what, before we start with it, I want to mention, by the way, something real quick yesterday with the whole discussion of Zed Zagodim.
Right.
And I mentioned at the very end that they talk about the Magen Avraham, talks about it in connection with Chometz on Pesach,
right.
Because Chometz on Pesach is also B'masha, who's similar to Avodah Zarah. So in that sense, there's a reason to extend it to that. But that actually comes into the core question when we talk about milk from a cow that was fed on chametz before or during Pesach, where it was fed. Can you drink that milk? So one idea behind it, there you have a case of Zeva Zagodim. You have the
cow was fed before.
So if it's fed before Pesach, you have less of an issue because then it's already bottled.
Right.
But if you have it fed on Pesach rather with chametz, so it's also being fed with other food as well, and besides that, it already exists. And there you have a case of Zeva Zagodim. So therefore, you have reason to be machmer on it, and that is the idea behind the minhag of not drinking milk that was milked during Pesach. In principle, it's mutter because Zeva Zagodim. However, given the Magen Avraham's position that Zeva Zagodim should be also when it comes to chametz,
we
try to be machmer. On top of that, also, I mean, there is the actual fact that sometimes you have a little bit of the cow's feed actually gets into the milk undigested. Sometimes you can have it. Talks about in Shulchan Aruch cases where an animal is fed on grain, for example, and you find a grain in the milk because it landed in there while it was being milked or whatever. Yeah, well, nowadays they filter milk, fine, maybe, so it's less of an issue, but still, so that comes into play also, but yeah. Okay. Anyway.
Can't find a grain?
Conceivably, you could. I mean, in the old days, it could happen that a little bit of it lands in the pail or whatever. Nowadays, again, if they filter it and pasteurize or whatever, it's probably less likely, but yeah. Fine. Anyway, the Mishnah says, Kesed Mevatla, how are you Mevatla and Asherah? Not a yid, obviously, a yid can't be Mevatla, but what does a goy have to do to be Mevatla Asherah? Kirsim Bezirid, if he cuts off branches, Kirsim Rashi says, is he cuts off dry branches, or Zirid, is he cuts off fresh branches? Either way, he's cutting them off for his own purposes, for example, to use as firewood or as animal food or whatever, not... No, but that, the point is, now he's obviously not considering this tree an object of worship anymore if he's cutting off pieces of it, not for the sake of the tree, but rather because...
It
doesn't matter. We said before that one goy can be mevatel another goy is a bedazara. The point is, once he starts cutting off branches from it, where it's lasar koy, it's for his purposes, rather than to beautify the tree, then that means he's mevatel. Right. Not a momentum makal or shavit, or if he took from it a stick, a makal or a shavit, are both types of sticks, a makil is a harder stick, a shavit is a softer stick, whatever it is. I feel the ola, even if he just took one leaf from the tree, where he's not doing it to beautify the tree, but rather because he needs the leaf, harei zebkela, then it's bottle because then obviously he's not, he doesn't consider it avodah zarah.
Taking it with a stick?
No, he pulls a stick off it, for example. So that he pulls a stick off it. So even a leaf, harei zebkela. Shipa, what if he sanded down the tree, or planed it, or whatever, or smoothed it out? Lutsarka asura, if he did it for the sake of the tree in order to beautify it, and more generally this applies to all the previous things in the Mishnah, the taking off branches and etc. also. If he did it in order to beautify the tree, asura, then it remains also, because he obviously still worships it. Shalai lutsarka mutaris, if he's doing it not for the sake of the tree, but rather because he wants the sawdust or whatever, then it's mutar, same idea, because then obviously he was mevatel.
What's the chiddush of the last part?
So actually, the Tosfos Yom Tov actually asked the question why it only mentions lutsarka in this last case of Shifa. The Pharisee Surah wants to say, because maybe the difference is, all the previous cases, we're talking about taking a leaf or a branch or whatever. Here, you're talking about taking from the actual trunk of the tree itself, sanding it off or whatever. You would, shifa with the pashtas, meaning you're sanding down or planing down the trunk itself. You would think maybe then it should be bottled either way. No, if he's doing it with soroka, it's still awesome. Okay, so the question, so that part is obvious, but the question is, osen shvoy in matahei aleihem. So suppose now we're talking about the goy sanded down the tree, litzarka, in order to beautify the tree. So we said the tree itself is not bottle, it's still also hana. What about the sawdust or the chips that result from it? Are you allowed to have hana from them or not? Are they bottle or not? Pliggy
you have to dispose of them.
Right. Well, you have to destroy them. Right. You have to, right. Pliggy barav huna v'rav chia barav. Not v'rav chia, chia barav, whatever. So rav huna and chia barav argue on what would be the din. Chada omar asurin v'chada omar mutarin. One says they remain asur because the tree itself is not bottle, and therefore the sawdust that he planed off the tree, right. Or the chips, whatever, the pieces of wood. So one says they're asur v'chada omar mutarin, and the other one says they're not. Tanya commander Amar Mutarin. In fact, we learn a Braisa according to the second opinion that they're mutter. The Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, Ovid Kechavim Sheshipa Avodis Kechavim Mutzarkoi. If a guy stands down in Avodah Zarah, so here we're not talking anymore necessarily about a tree, any kind of Avodah Zarah, it could be a statue as well, yes. Mutzarkoi, if he does it for his own needs, because he wants the sawdust, he Ushfo'eha Mutarin, then both the original Avodah Zarah, both the original tree or idol or what have you, and the sawdust are both mutter, because then he was Mavathor at that point. Regardless of the amount, right. Well, wait, we'll talk about the amount, actually, we'll get to. But for Pashtus, we're talking about, Lutzorka, if he did it for the sake of the Avodah Zarah, in order to beautify it, he asurosh for El Mutarin, the Avodah Zarah, or the tree, or whatever, remains asur, the sawdust becomes mutter, so there we go, according to the second opinion that we just said among the Amoroyim, that it's mutter.
The first opinion
would have said they're asur, so therefore we have a braisa, like the second opinion, so therefore the halacha must be like it, and in fact it is. The Yisrael Sheshif Avodah Zarah, on the other hand, if a Jew stands down on Avodah Zarah, Bein Lutzorka, whether he does it to beautify the Avodah Zarah or for his own needs, because he needs the sawdust, either way, he or Shvar'ah Asurin, the Avodah Zarah remains also and the sawdust remains also, because as usual, a Jew cannot be Mevatel on Avodah Zarah of a Goy, as we discussed before. So now we have a related question. Itma, Avodah Kechavim Shenishtavra. If you have an Avodah Zarah that broke, well, so now we talked about it earlier in the Perek, but now we're going to have a new machlokas on the subject that's not referring
to the previous one.
Now, why it doesn't, that's what we're going to have to figure out. That's what the Meforshim are going to discuss. But first, let's talk about what the Gemara itself says. Avodah Kechavim Shenishtavra, if an Avodah Zarah breaks spontaneously. So what is the din as far as the pieces? Rav Amat Sarach Lavasar for Kesem B'Kesem. Rav says you're going to have to be mevatel individually every chip of wood that came.
Is it a man-made or it's
Okay, on the face of it, we could be talking about either kind.
Yeah.
But we have to figure out what we had a machloikas on this subject between Rav Yechanan and Rish Lakish earlier in the Perek, near the beginning of the Perek. The Gemara over here is not referring to that machloikas, and vice versa, in that sugya it didn't refer to our machloikas, implying that they are two completely different things.
Yeah.
So the question becomes, what's the difference? The question becomes, what's the difference between them, right?
Right.
So that's what we're going to have to figure out. So Rav Amat Sorach Levatel for Kesem B'Kesem. Rav says you have to be Mevatel every individual chip of wood from this Avodah Zarah. No, in other words, a goy is going to have to be mevatel. Rav says that a goy is going to, in order for it to work, a goy is going to have to be mevatel every single individual chip from this Avodah Zarah. Or Shmuel Amar, Avodah Kechavim, Ein Betela Ela Derech Gedilasa. Shmuel says that no, an Avodah Zarah only becomes bottle, or only needs to become bottle, when it's in its normal way of growth. So therefore, if it breaks on its own, then it will be bottle. Because the point is, Rav holds each chip of it, each little piece of it, will now become effectively a new independent little Avodah Zarah. Therefore, you have to be mevatel each one individually. Shmuel is going to say that, again, like we said earlier in the Perek, the Goy is going to figure to himself, this idol couldn't even save itself. Why? How would it be able to save me? And therefore, he's automatically mevatel the whole thing. So the question is, when Shmuel uses the expression "ein b'tela ela derech gedilasa," his expression is it only becomes bottle in its normal way of growth. So the question is, Adrav, what does Shmuel mean by that? Derech gedilasa mean mevatla? If the Avodah Zarah remains in its original state of growth, then how is it bottle? The whole point is being mevatla. It means doing something to damage it or whatever. Ela hachakama ein avodas kachavim tzricha lebatel ela derech gedilasa. No, rather the machloekas, what Shmuel means to say is, when it comes to being mevatel avodas zara, you only need to be mevatel if it's in its original state. But again, if it broke into pieces, then you have the svara that we said before, it broke, so therefore obviously it's powerless, and therefore the goy figures, I may as well not bother.
So what's the chiddush in this?
Well, so now, so again, the question is, how exactly does this relate to the machlokas earlier in our parak, where Shmuel himself actually had said that if you find broken pieces of Avodah Zarah, they're mutter b'hanah. We're here. We're going to discuss the question: do they worship the pieces or not? So Rashi explains the difference is. So Rashi over here explains the difference is that there, what happens is we don't know who broke it. Did it break by itself, or did the goy break it? usually we would assume it's not common for an Avodah Zarah to get broken spontaneously. Therefore, especially because it actually mentioned the idea that Goyim usually watch over them, they usually protect them to make sure that they're safe. It's possible, but more likely, if we find an Avodah Zarah that's broken at random, we should probably assume that the Goy probably broke it. And if he broke it, then he's Mamakas.
It's easy to know. If he doesn't rebuild it, then...
No, well, like this, we come across the pieces. We come across the pieces later on. So Rashi learns that B'Tam, we would assume that a Goy, that Shmuel would hold, that we assume the Goy probably broke it.
Right.
Therefore it would be Bottle. And on the other hand, all Gemara is talking about over here, if we know for a fact it broke on its own, then we have to figure out what kind of bissel does it need, or does it require bissel at all. So that's Rashi's way of learning the difference between...
Either we know, we don't know. If we know...
So according to Rashi, it's a difference whether we know or not, right? Tosfos learns that here we're talking about, when the discussion we're talking about over here, remember, this is in context of a Mishnah that's talking about a tree. So you're talking about a tree is constantly shedding leaves and branches and whatnot. They don't give up worshipping the tree because it shed its leaves, because that's the normal part of the growth of a tree.
Right.
So that would be the machlokas over here. Do they worship the pieces that fall off the tree, or maybe they only worship the tree itself and they ignore the pieces that fall off it? So Rav is going to be saying that, for example, you have to be mevachel every individual branch or every individual leaf that falls off it before you can have anah from it. Shmuel is going to say that ena v'ris sechavim tzricha lebatel ela jerach b'dilasa, you only need to be mevachel it when it's a normal kind of growth.
The whole discussion that we had about the nashera and the leaves falling, and we said if the zegarem apply,
implies that the leaves themselves are also
exactly
right. But here,
so what are we offering?
Because here, what we're saying is so here, what we're saying over here is that like this. That's the question. Given that a tree is constantly shedding leaves anyway, and they obviously still continue worshipping the leaves anyway, then leaves themselves should be also, and we're going to see in a second, we're going to continue discussing over here what Rav holds and what Shmuel holds. We're going to say, it's not that Shmuel is saying the leaves are mutter.
Previously, we never had that question. Once we said the leaves fall, that's it.
No, we didn't say the leaves are bottles, just the opposite. We said that the leaves are not bottles.
The leaves are not bottles, right.
So that's the point, in other words.
So
Rav is saying that you're going to have to be mevatel every individual leaf or every individual branch, meaning,
right,
in other words, each, right, which is what we said before.
Right.
And that's what we're going to continue talking about, what Shmuel means. So anyway, that's the second way of explaining. And then a third way of explaining, the first way is Rashi's way that we're talking about, that earlier in the parak Shmuel was talking about where we don't know what happened and therefore we assume the goy broke it, whereas over here we know it broke spontaneously.
Okay.
According to Tosfos, here we're talking specifically about a tree. And then you have an explanation of the Ramban, which is that there's a difference between did the whole of a disorder break into pieces, or is most of it still intact or just some pieces fell off it? And you could argue one way or the other. You could argue if the whole thing broke to pieces, then maybe they're going to continue worshipping each individual piece because they don't have a whole lot of desire to worship anymore. Whereas if only some small pieces broke off, they may give up on those and just worship the actual... Or you could argue the other way around. Well, that's the reason. That's why the Gemara doesn't, according to that explanation, according to the Ramban, that's again why our Gemara doesn't refer to that machlokes before.
That I understand.
And that's fine.
Because if you say it's not a tree, right. I understand.
Okay.
But if you say it's a tree, then it comes...
So one second. Okay, so lema v'hokamitzi. So should we say that Rav and Shmuel are arguing over the following point? The marsava ovdin l'shvarin or marsava in ovdin l'shvarin? Rav will hold that the goyim continue to worship even the broken pieces, and Shmuel will hold that they don't. So
whether it's a tree or not.
Again, so according to any of the three opinions, we have the Gemara in front of us. So therefore, the three explanations of the Rishonim are all going to have to accommodate themselves to the words of the Gemara. So according to Rashi, are we saying that if the Avodah Zarah broke on its own, and we know that it broke on its own,
right,
so Rav would hold they still continue worshipping the pieces, because obviously we can't say the goy was mevatelit because he didn't break it. Whereas Shmuel will say that they don't worship the pieces because he's going to figure that it couldn't save itself, and so therefore it's not going to save me.
a point. In some cases they will, in some cases they will not.
But we have to make a general rule. So,
How can we make a general rule?
We can say, is it bottle or is it not bottle? Or do you have to, so Shmuel is holding that, no. Ein b'tela ela derech dilosa. Should we say that that's what it means, that Shmuel holds they don't worship the pieces? Wait, we're not done with the discussion yet, hold on. According to Tosfos, again, the question would be that the question would be, of course, they continue worshiping the tree, but what do we do as far as the pieces that fall off? Do we say maybe that was a bottle? And in that case, then fine. The whole discussion we had before that Zeb is a goat, then fine. That would all be according to that. Shmuel would understand it differently. Shmuel might understand it. That's the point of the machlokes is whether they worship the Shvarim or not, right?
Might be only like that, right?
Shmuel might say that that itself is the subject of the machlokes, right? The answer is loy. The kulama urgin l'shvarim. No, we can say everybody agrees that the goyim will continue. And again, according to the Ramban's explanation, the machlokes might be if you have again. Could you argue that if the whole of a desert broke, they will worship the pieces? But if you have most of it is still intact, and you just have a few pieces that fell off, they won't worship those. Or the other way around. Maybe if the whole thing broke, they'll give up on it completely. But if only some pieces fell off, they'll still continue worshiping the main of a desert. Oh, yeah. The answer is loyd kulama ojim l'shvarim. No, we can say that both Rav and Shmuel will say that the goyim continue worshipping the pieces, according to any of these three explanations. V'hocha b'shivrei shvarim kamifadi. The machlokas rather is as far as not the big broken pieces, but the broken pieces of broken pieces. In other words, the very small pieces. So, for example, so Rashi says, if let's say the broken pieces themselves broke into even smaller pieces. That would be where Shmuel argues that not Mar Sava Shivrei Shvarim Asurin. Rav will hold that even Shivrei Shvarim, even tiny little fragments are also, and they, because they may worship them, and therefore you need to be mivachel each one individually. Or Mar Sava Shivrei Shvarim Mutarim, where Shmuel will hold, fine, I agree big pieces are also, but small pieces might be mutter. A different girsa, Hagoris Agrob brings up the Rambam, has another understanding of it, not Shivrei Shvarim, but Shorei Shvarim. Meaning, so let's say you were mevatel one piece. Do you need to be mevatel all the other pieces? According to Rav, yes, you mevatel, the Goyim is mevatel this piece, but he also needs to be mevatel this one, and also this one, etc. According to Shmuel, once he was mevatel one, then it works for all of them.
That's
how the Rambam would learn this. Yeah.
That is not coming clearly from the Shmuel.
You only need to be mevatel of a desara in the normal way that it grows, in the normal way that it stands. Therefore, once it's broken, you mevatel one piece, and that's it. You don't need to be mevatel all the other individuals.
So why do we have to mevatel one piece if it's not the way it was?
Because you could still argue, again, they maybe worship the big pieces.
We don't have to worship the small pieces.
No, but that's what we're saying. Shmuel will say, fine, they do. Maybe they'll worship the big pieces and the small pieces, but once you're Mavato, one of them, that's it. The whole thing is bottle because they were all originally part of one thing. Okay. The Ibai Sema, or another way of explaining the Machlokes, this has nothing to do with an Avodah Zarah that broke in the sense that can never be reassembled. The Kulam Shivrei Shvarim Mutar, and we can argue both Rav and Shmuel say that the smaller pieces will be Mutar. Rather, the case we're talking about over here, that Rav and Shmuel are arguing about, is an Avodah Zarah that's made out of pieces that are assembled together. Imagine like an Avodah Zarah made out of Lego or something.
Right.
Now the case is, it's made in such a way, you don't need a craftsman to put it back together. Any amateur is able to reassemble the pieces. Again, like they're made out of Lego. Anybody can... Well, therefore, Marasava, given the Hedyat Yerachalach Zero Led Batla, the Rav is going to hold, since a Hedyat, since even an ordinary person, not a craftsman, is able to put it back together, therefore it's not Batla. Therefore, if you want to have Hana from there, you are going to have a Goy be Mevatel it properly. And even if it wasn't put back together, you're going to have to have him be Mevatel each individual piece. Because otherwise, they're probably going to reassemble it and continue worshipping it. Well, Mar Sava, whereas Shmuel holds, Ein Avodah Chavim V'Kela Ela Derech Dilasa, when he says that Avodah Zarah only needs to become bottle. So before we change Shmuel's words to say it only needs to become bottle in the way it grows, now that we're having a new explanation of Rav and Shmuel, we can go back to his original wording, that Avodah Zarah is only bottle in the normal way that it grows, or the normal way that it stands. So, for example, again, in our Mishnah, when we're talking about an Asherah, So what happens is leaves fall off it, for example, and eventually those leaves become shivrei shvarim, but that's derech b'dilasa, because it's normal for a tree to shed leaves. On the other hand, it's not normal, even though this avodah zarah can easily be taken apart and reassembled, it's still not normal, right? But with an avodah zarah here that's made out of pieces, it still can be disassembled and reassembled, but it's not normal for it to be disassembled. So therefore, when it comes to a tree, for example, where it's normal for it to shed leaves, then we're going to say the leaves are off, so even no matter what small fragments they become into. Whereas Shmuel will hold over here, it's not the normal thing for the avodah zarah to break into its component Legos. The ain svichel abatol. Therefore, Shmuel will hold. You do not need to be mabatol it. Once it broke, even though it's true a hedyot can put it back together, there's no reason to worry about this.
But if it does self-assemble.
Self-assemble, maybe we're down there. They didn't have self-assembly in those times.
But does now,
it, now we have self-assembly. Maybe it would still be awesome. Fine. Okay. So we're going to talk more in the next paragraph. We're going to talk about the details of sometimes it involves only dibur, and sometimes it involves mice. It depends on the exact circumstances. We'll see. But the point is, anyway, that according to... So now, this last explanation of the Gemara is the main one that's accepted in halacha. I mean, there is also the previous explanation. This idea that if you have an avodah zarah that's broken into pieces in such a way that it's made out of pieces joined together, where a hedyot can put it back together, where it can be reassembled, the halacha is like Rav, as it usually is in Hilchos Isser v'Hetzer. You'll have to be mevatel. The goy will have to be mevatel each piece individually. We don't say like Shmuel that it doesn't need bittul at all. We don't say that once you mevatel one piece, then that's it, the rest goes. No, you have to be mevatel each piece individually. Yeah. Hadron alach kol aflam.
So what about, let's say a car that should split into pieces, different pieces.
Okay, I mean, that car needs an umman to reassemble it. From our Gemara, the implication seems to be, if you need an umman to put it back together, then we could argue as long as it's down into shivrei shvarim, as long as it's little tiny fragments, then both Rav and Shmuel will agree that it's mutter. Because at that point, they're not going to be worshipping it anymore. So in the case of a car, fine, it only gets divided into shvarim. Maybe that's different. We said before that even Shmuel might agree they worship shvarim. But then that would be different. Then it would still be altered. But here we're talking about it got broken to shivrei shvarim, little tiny pieces. But a hedyot can put them back together. As opposed to, if it takes an umman to put them back together, that's different. So now this next parak is going to continue with the dinim about avodah zarah, about statues and other such things. Mainly, though, the previous parak was mostly focusing on idols themselves. This parak, a large part of it, is going to be focusing more on tikrovis avodah zarah, on things that are offered, and the different ways in which avodah zarah is worshipped. And then we're going to continue.
Tikrovis cannot be buffled.
We discussed that, right? And we'll get into why that should be. Then it continues talking about more of the dinim of bittul. We touched on bittul in our parak, but we didn't get into all the nitty-gritty of it. How you go about being repassed, all right? And then after that, by kind of a natural segue from tikrovis, the last half of the parak is going to go back to the topic of yayin nesa, and that's going to consume the second half of our parak and most of the next one.
There's a ger who goes and bows to Avodah Zarah and because as Avodah Zarah is considered still a ger or not?
Yes, I mean he's a Yisrael Momer in that case.
He's a
Yisrael Momer, yeah, as long as he went a proper ger. Okay.
So he cannot move up with him.
Right. Well, he's a Yid, he can't be move up anyway, right? Yeah. Rabbi Shmuel, Masholosh. Okay, so now in the first couple of blocks of our parak, we're going to be talking a lot about Melchulis. Melchulis is an idol. We mentioned it briefly. In Sanhedrin a little bit. In English, it's called Mercury. It was a very common thing that we'll talk about later. Why the Chachamim called it Melchulis. A very common thing was they would have a pillar representing this Geshke, and then they would put someplace nearby, they would put a pile of stones, and very often the pile of stones itself was meant to represent the Geshke. So you'd have a pillar, maybe that would have a head or whatever on it. But aside from that, even when they didn't have the pillar, they would sometimes have, especially by crossroads and whatnot, it was a very common thing that they'd have a pile of stones. The minimum, as we'll see in the Gemara, is one stone here, one here, and one on top. The Yerushalmi has an expression, like symbolically, they would consider it like the top stone is the head of the Geshke and the two stones beneath are its arms. But a way of worshipping it, the way the common way of worshipping it would be by throwing stones towards the pile to make the pile bigger, and those stones, that's
the stones making the pile
bigger,
larger, yeah. But not higher.
Well, eventually it becomes higher. Also, eventually enough stones grow up over there and it becomes higher. Yeah. So that's called miracles. So now we're going to start by discussing that. So part of what we're going to discuss is this question: when stones are thrown at miracles, is that tikkurisa, or is that building up the avod? Are the stones tikkurisa, or are they building up the avodah zarah? Tikkurisa is what's offered to an avodah zarah, like an animal that's chested to it, or wine that's poured to it, or whatever. Which not only is also banal, like the statue itself, but unlike the statue, it can't become bubbles. So it becomes necessary to know what's the gene of these stones. So that's what we're going to get to.
Can they serve it without throwing the stones?
So later on we're going to talk about we may get to it today, more likely we won't, but we talked in Sanhedrin, you have these four types of avodah, which for any avodah zarah, a person would be chayav misa for doing them: zibuach, kitur, nisuch, and shachavah, shechting a creature, or burning something, or sprinkling something, or bowing. All of those are also, whether that's the normal way of worshipping this avodah zarah or not. Aside from that, every avodah zarah had its own unique rituals that they would do for it. Throwing stones is an example for merkulis. The poyer atma lepoer is another example. So those are only higher for that particular avodah zarah. So in the case of merkulis, yeah, most people would worship it by throwing stones at it. You could also have, actually in Sanhedrin we also talked about, we had a case that clearing away stones was also a problem, because then you're making room for more people to put stones, but whatever. Obviously, you could also have that a person goes and checks the korban in its honor, or sprinkles, oh, yeah. or sprinkles something, or, yeah. Okay. Putting stones on a caver is a different thing. That's, first of all, it's not throwing. But second of all, we put stones on a caver in order to show that we were there, in order to show that the caver is not abandoned or whatever. It's a whole different thing. It's not worship of avodah zarah at all.
To show
that people are visiting this caver, that it wasn't.
Why should we show that people?
Because it's covered for the mess, that people aren't just abandoning this caver and not coming to it. But mind you, the Muslims have a ritual when they go on their pilgrimages to Mecca or whatever. They have a ritual over there involving throwing stones at a pillar. So the official thing they give is to drive away demons or some such thing. The Ran actually holds that that's an example of miracles, and that makes them over Avodah Zarah. The vast majority of Rishonim disagree with that and say that no, we can take them at their word. They're not doing it as Avodah Zarah. They're doing it for whatever, to scare away demons or whatever their reason is. And yeah, they believe in demons.
The films that you see from them never shows that they're throwing stones.
Okay.
They turn around.
No, that's you're talking about the big stone over there. You're talking about the Kaaba over there. I'm talking about there's some pillar near there that's a thing. Yeah. Okay. So, Rabbi Shmuel, Mesholosh Avonim Zubetzad Merkulis. If you have three stones next to each other, so not even two on bottom and one on top, like we said before. Even if you just have three of them, one, two, three, next to a Merkulis, they're also. Because, in other words, you have a merkulis, you have a big merkulis, we have dozens or hundreds or whatever of stones there. They've been worshipping it for a long time. And now you find three stones near it. Even they're not two on bottom and one on top. The asures, they're also for reasons that we'll see in the Gemara. Ushayim mutaris, but if you only find two of them, they're mutar. The Chachamim say, whichever stones seem to have fallen off the merkulis pile, those are also, no matter how many, whether it's three or two or whatever, whichever stones don't appear to be from it, that seem to be further away, and therefore they were never from it, then it would be mutar even if you find three of them next to each other. That we'll discuss in the Gemara. Okay, so the Gemara says, now, the Rabbanan's opinion we can understand. They hold that, as we just said at the end of the previous parak, they will hold that the goyim not only worship the whole of a desert when it's intact, but even the pieces that fall off it, which after all, if we assume that these stones fell off the pile, they were once part of the miracle of this pile, now they're not, therefore it's shivre, and therefore we can, now we don't consider them
shivre.
They're the broken pieces. Effectively, they broke off.
They rolled down.
Fine, same difference. They were once part of the pile, and now they're not. So now, tikrovis, we're not going to call them, but we will consider that they were once part of the avodah zarah, and now they still worship them individually. Therefore, we can argue nirus imay diikalamem minenaf. Also, if they seem to be from it, where therefore it's likely they fell off the pile, then they're mutar. Chein nirus imay mutaris. But if they don't seem to be part of the original pile, then they're mutar. So that abanon, we understand.
So one second, if you have some stones next to a macrolith that don't look like they're white, and the other ones are grey.
No, no, we're not talking about colour, because they wouldn't take just specific stones. No, they take any. We're not talking about that. No. Because when people would take stones and throw them, they wouldn't particularly care about the color. No, no, we don't mean color. We mean how
so
far are we, how far, yeah, that could be different.
How do they do it?
No, no, no. The original Merkulis consists of 1, 2, 3. Then, once you had a Merkulis like that set up, people would start throwing stones at it, and the pile would, over the years, become bigger and bigger. So now, so that Rabbanan, we understand, they're saying as long as you have stones that are close enough to the Merkulis that it's likely they fell off it, we're going to assume they're part of the Avodah Zarah, therefore they're Aser. If they're far away enough, or as we'll see in the Gemara later, the different circumstances, then we can assume they're not part from it, then they're Mutter. El Rabbi Shmuel, my Tassava, but what is Rabbi Shmuel holding? That he's saying only if you find three, but not if you find two. E kasava e ovdin l'shvarim. If he holds like the Chachamim, that the Goyim worship pieces that broke off the Avodah Zarah also, after the Tauti Nami lives there, then two stones should also be altered, because like the Chachamim say, they could have fallen off the Merkulis. E ain ovdin, and even one, yeah. E ain ovdin l'shvarim. And if they don't worship pieces, if we assume once a piece broke off, like we said before, then automatically they're Mevachalis, because they say, well, we'll continue worshiping the main statue, we're not going to bother them with this piece. After the Tzalach Nami, though, so if you find three of them next to each other, they're not in a Merkulis form, because they're not one, two, and a third on top. So why should they be also? Why is he saying? The classic Merkulis is 1, 2, and a third on top. Rabbi Shmuel is saying in our Mishnah, you just find 1, 2, 3 next to each other, then they're also, as long as they're near the Merkulis. Why? What's the logic? Amr of Yitzchak by Yosef, Amr of Yechanan, be a Jewish in Rosh Hashanah, if we know that the stones fell off the Merkulis pile, give it a Hakal Asuris, and everybody's going to agree they're also, great. Why? Because even according to the opinion, we just said at the end of the previous parak, we can argue in this Macholikus of Rav and Shmuel, we said before, that we can argue, do Goyim worship pieces that fell off and Avodah Zarah? One way of arguing is that they'll continue worshipping the main Avodah Zarah, but they'll ignore the pieces that fell off.
Right.
Even then, though, that only applies to the type of Avodah Zarah where it's not normal for pieces to fall off. Aval Hacha, but over here with a Merkulis pile, the Me'ikrit, Taburi, Mitabri, to begin with, it all breaks apart. The stones are not attached together, they're not cemented together or whatever. There's nothing preventing them, yeah, they're displaced. There's nothing preventing them from falling off. Therefore, Hainu Urche, so therefore it's natural, it's normal for stones to fall off. Therefore, everybody would have to agree that stones that fall off a Merkulis pile are still considered part of the Avodah Zarah and are still altered. So it would be similar to, for example, leaves that fell off a tree in the end of the previous parak.
What are we talking about?
So that's not the Machloikis. That's not the crux of the Machloikis between Rabbi Shmuel and the Chacham. Ki pligi b'stama. Rather, the Machloikis is, where it's stam, we don't know that they fell off the pile, but they're close enough. They might have, they might not. So therefore, b'mkorovos nami. Now, if they're very close to the pile, so Rashi learns it means, for example, they're within a half amma, an amma from the pile. Tosfos has a whole different explanation. We'll get to in a bit. But if the stones are very close to the pile, within an amma or a half amma. What do you mean it's elevated?
It's on a mount, and so it could still be coming from the pile, but it rolled down.
Yeah, okay, fine. But the ikkel may be named Nafal. If you have reason, therefore, to think it's very likely that these stones fell from there, because where else would they have come from? Again, Divrei Akal Asuris. Then again, both the Chachamim and Rabbi Shmuel will have to agree they're also. Ki pligi b'meruchokris. The machlokes rather would be if the stones are further away. So Rashi says, Rashi uses the expression ba'arba am. Now, Hagoyt Abach changed that to the Soich Arba Amos, within 4 Amos, meaning again, Rashi held that Mekorovis mean they're within a half an Amma or an Amma. Rechoikis, therefore, would be they're further than that, but within 4 Amos, within 4 Amos, because outside 4 Amos, you would have little reason to assume it came from the Merkulis. Yeah, even if it was on a hill or whatever, still, okay, they could roll off, but how far are you going to go? You're not going to say that stones that you find 100 Amos away are going to be altered. You have to draw the line somewhere. After all, you don't know these stones fell off from the Merkulis. So anyway, that's how Rashi learns. Different other Rishonim talk about different possibilities. Batsad Arba Amos might be, Merchokos might mean at the edge of 4 Amos, it might mean just outside 4 Amos, whatever. Okay, so the question is, the Hobbit Sad Merkulis Katani. Yes, but the Mishnah started saying, Rabbi Shmuel said, you find three stones next to each other, next to a Merkulis. What kind of 4 Amos? The answer is my v'tzad, v'tzad ava amas didei. Right, but it means next to its four amas. Again, either according to Rashi within it, or according to other Rishonim right outside it, or right on the border, or whatever. Yeah, very close to it. So therefore, so now we understand the machlokes. Rabbi Shmuel Savar. So it's like this. It's not a question, did the stones fall off the mountain? Not necessarily did they fall off. If they fell off, they wouldn't have necessarily have gone that far.
Okay.
However, Rabbi Shmuel Savar Oisin Melkulus Katan Besad Melkulus Gadol. Rabbi Shmuel will hold that it's a common thing for the goyim. They may make a small Melkulus pile next to a large one. So they have a big one that's been there for years and has now grown to hundreds of stones or whatever. Now, let's say they'll start it because somebody wants to start. I want to dedicate a new Melkulus. So he'll build a new Melkulus pile. He'll start a new Melkulus pile near the old one. So therefore, Rabbi Shmuel will say, Shalosh Yadamian Lemelkulus. So when you have three stones, even if they're not in the classic Melkulus configuration, but nevertheless, you have three stones, which is the minimum number of pieces you need for a new Melkulus, that'll be Asoreh. Shtayim Mutaris, but if you only have two, not even enough to create a new Melkulus, then Rabbi Shmuel will have Mutar, because then we don't have to assume that those two stones came from the Melkulus. We don't have to, there's no reason to think that they constitute a new Melkulus, because two stones is not enough to constitute a Melkulus. Therefore, Rabbi Shmuel will hold the Mutar. Rabbanon Sabi, whereas the Rabbanon will hold Ein Oisin Melkulus Katan Mitzad Melkulus Gadol. So Rabbi Shmuel is going to hold it. You only have two, because you don't have enough to even make a Melkulus. So the only problem Rabbi Shmuel is going to say is that I'm not concerned about that they might have fallen off the pile. The only concern I have is maybe they're starting a new Melkulus over here. Two is not enough to make a new Melkulus. Rabbanon Sabri, where is the Rabbanon hold?
It's not enough to make a Melkulus, but it's enough to make them Avodah Zarah.
No, obviously if they worship them individually, but Rabbi Shmuel, we're not going to assume the stam that any stones we find are worshipped as Avodah Zarah.
Do they believe that even though it's not a real Melkulus, it's still...
No, again, we have to draw the line somewhere. It's not like we know these stones came from the Melkulus. It's not that we know they would put them for Avodah Zarah. We find them around four Amos away, or within four Amos of a Melkulus. So therefore, if you have three, then that's one thing. But once you have less than three, then if you small hold, it's not a problem. What? No, not because that's how they built the Melkulus. So a Melkulus, classic Melkulus, is one here, one on the right, one on the left, and one on top. So therefore, if you only have two, then you don't even have that. So therefore, there's no reason Rabbi Shmuel did. Rabbanon stop. Read that Rabbanon hold ain oisin Melkulus cut beside Melkulus gadol. The goyim don't do that. They don't build a small Melkulus next to a big one. If you have a big one over there already, they'll just continue throwing rocks at it.
I believe one thing, exactly the opposite of Rabbi Shmuel. I mean, it should be accepted by both that they do build small ones next to real ones.
Okay, in general we try to say that there's no machlokas in Mitzvahs, that they don't argue about the actual facts on the ground, just the interpretation. Here it seems to be, okay, so maybe it is. Once in a while we have to have that. It could also be, you know, you might have, for example, that some goyim do, some don't. The question is, which are the majority? The question, you know, you're not going to start going and taking a census necessarily of which ones do and which ones don't, whatever. So Rabbanon Sabri ain't oisin Melkulus cotton beside Melkulus God. Or they don't bother making a small Melkulus next to a big one. Therefore, Loishna Shalosh Loishna Shtayim. So it doesn't matter whether there are three or whether there are two. Nires Imayasuras, only if the stones appear to have fallen off the big Melkulus, then they're also, because again, it's still part of the Avodah Zarah, because as we said, it's normal for a Melkulus pile to fall apart spontaneously, because there's rock, so therefore they're not Mavakalit on that basis. If they're in nearest Ima, if they don't look like they came from it, again, not by color, but by distance, basically, then they're looking, because there's no reason to think particularly they came from it. Or Rashi says, because then they're Shvarim. No, so actually, so what Rashi says is that, The Shvarim is the next piece of the Gemara, rather. So again, if you find them close enough to it that they appear to have fallen from it, then they're also, because they're still part of it. If not, then there's no reason to assume that they fell off of it. Okay. So now let's analyze that. Omamar, v'yadua shenoshu menu divra hakalasuris. So we said that, it's interesting, Omamar usually is when we quote from a Gemara, it is when we quote from a Braisa or whatever. Here we're quoting from a Yehman. Okay. Anyway, so Rabbi Yochanan has said, "V'yadua shenoshu menu divra hakalasuris." We said that if we know the stones fell off the pile, then everybody agrees they're osur. both Rabbi Shmuel and the Chachamim, because the fact is they're part of the Avodah Zarah. However, the Gemara says a Ramini. I have a contradiction. Another Brisa, says, Avonim Shenoshu Min Amerkulus, stones that fell off Amerkulus, and implying we know they fell off, we know they were once part of the pile, and now we find them nearby. Nearest Imre Asudas, Shein Nearest Imre Mutaris, if they appear to be part of it, then they're also, because then they're still part of the Avodah Zarah. If they're not Nearest Imre, then they're Mutar, because now they're Shvarim, now they're broken pieces. So not like we said before, we assumed before that everybody will agree that Goyim will still continue worshipping the pieces, because it's normal for a miracle to break apart. Now we see this, but Isis seems to be saying that not. Once they're in Nearest Imre, and the fact is we know, unlike our previous discussion, we didn't know whether they fell off or not. Here we know they fell off the pile, and still, because they're in Nearest Imre, they're Mutar. Whereas Rabbi Shmuel still says, like he says in the Mishnah, if there's three of them together, they're author. If there's two of them together, they're mutter. So what is it?
These two seem to be coming from the pile.
Right. And the Chachamim are saying it doesn't matter how many there are, even if they seem to have come from the pile.
That's logical, but why Rabbi Shmuel?
No, break in the sense that they were originally part of the pile and now they're separated from it. They're detached from the pile.
They didn't break, but they detached.
Right. So that would be called that Ovin L'Shvarim. So again, before we assume that everybody agrees Ovin L'Shvarim, in the case of Merkulus at least, because of Merkulus, it's common for stones to fall off the pile.
Right.
But now, based on this Braisa, we have to have a different understanding. Even though we know these stones came off, that they were once part of the Merkulus pile, nevertheless, we're saying if they're in Nearest Imre, they're Mutter, according to the Chachamim. And even Rabbi Shmuel is saying that if you find two of them, they're Mutter.
So that Braisa cannot be...
So that Braisa doesn't fit with what we said before.
Right.
Fine, you're right, you have to correct the wording of the Braisa. Not Shenoshu, that we know they fell off, but Shenimtu. We find them nearby, and therefore that's exactly the case of our Mishnah, and exactly the case that Rabbi Shmuel was talking about before. We don't know they were ever part of the pile. If we knew they were part of the pile, they would be Shvarim, and they would definitely be Chosr, because we don't know whether they're part of the pile. So fine, we have a Braisa now saying the same thing as Rabbi Shmuel said, as Rabbi Yechanan said before. Rabbi Yechanan's an Amora. Fine, Rabbi Yechanan's an Amora. He said his piece, and now we have a Braisa supporting what he's saying. So it's not a contradiction to him, just the opposite. It reiterates what he says. That's a very common thing that we'll have to, an Amora says something, and later on we'll find a Braisa that says that. It reinforces him, yeah. It means there's no contradiction against him, and I don't know, yeah. Fine. The question is, fine, the Sovereign of Ishmael Shtein Mutaris. So are you telling me that if you find two stones within four amos of we just said before, then he would hold their mutter. Key pligi b'meruchokas. We said the argument at the top of the Amud we said is, if they're four amos, or within four amos away, but not so close that they obviously, that it's very likely they fell off the pile, there's a possibility maybe not. So we said before, Rabbi Shmuel would hold, if you find three, they could already constitute a new Merkulis, but if there's two, they can't, therefore they're mutter. But how can you say that? So Hatanya, but we learn in a Braisa, Rabbi Shmuel, Meshtayim B'Tfisa Lo Yasuris. Rabbi Shmuel says that if you find two stones in Tfisa Teit, meaning Tfisa usually meaning four amas, so just like a person is Tofus, four amas around them, so Lahavdil, the Avodah Zarah is also. So two that are stones that you find in Tfisa to the Merkulis, within four amas, are Asuras. Shalosh, and if you find three, after the middle Chokas Asuras, and even if they're further away, they would be Asuras. So what are you telling me the Machlokas is the Merchokas, and the Mekorovas, everybody will agree with Asur? Here we're saying, that Rabbi Shmuel was saying, if the Merchokas, if there's three, they're going to be Asur, and if they're, and two, if they're within four amas, they're going to be Asur, yeah?
What?
If it's within four amas, then Rabbi Shmuel is going to assume that it came from there. That's what the Braisa is saying. So we assumed before that only if you find it within a half amma or an amma or whatever, then you're going to say it came from there. But
is this, if you find any stone within four amas of this pile?
According to Rabbi Shmuel, that's what we're saying. So
any stone is such that.
Right, well, right, as long as you find it within four amas of the pile, and Rabbi Shmuel is saying now in this last price, that any stone that you find within four amas is going to be suspect, and if you find three stones together, even outside four amas, they're also going to be suspect, and they're going to be obvious.
That these two statements by Rabbi Shmuel should be understood by two different MRI?
Sometimes we do that. Sometimes we say there's two Tanoim who argue within what the Tana says, but we try not to do that. We try to say that we try to reconcile that.
So what's the answer?
So the answer is, Omar Rava, like Kasha, can be Tfisa Achas, can be Shtei Tfisas. The answer is, there's Tfisa Achas, where they're not only within four Amas, but they're not only within four amas, but there's nothing separating, there's nothing separating between the other stones and the main miraculous pile. That's called tfisa achas, kind of shtei tfisas, as opposed to when you have two tfisas, namely, what is shtei tfisas? V'heichidam, it could goiva beni bin. Suppose that you have, let's say, a little hill, a little rise, separating between these stones and the miraculous.
Yeah.
So therefore, there's no logic to say that they fell off it. So therefore, Rabbi Shmuel is going to say, fine, now that there's that goiva between them, even though they're within four amos, I'm not going to ask for them, because they obviously didn't fall off, because then they would have been blocked by that rise in between, by the mound in between. Therefore, you find two, then fine. You find three, then already they're off, because it's a miraculous cut.
Find two, next to the mound.
But then they would be murdered. Even though within four amos,
find three beyond the mound.
If you find three beyond the mound, because then Merkulis cotton, but that Merkulis gadol, like we said before, which will hold that they'll still start building a new Merkulis next to the old Merkulis.
Okay.
So therefore, three are going to be Osir, but and according to the Rabbanon, since they hold that you don't build a small Merkulis next to a big one, you're just going to continue throwing stones on the big one. Therefore, they're going to say even if you find three stones within, even though you find three stones together, they're still not going to be altered. Since they're not Nirois Imo, since they don't appear to have come from the main Merkulis, because they would have been blocked by the mound in between, therefore we can assume they're most of their Sam stones that are lying there, that are not part of the Avodah Zarah. Okay. Now, Tosfos has a discussion about this because, among others, Tosfos asked the question that it's not usual before we mention the matter of the mound. Before we mention the matter of the mound, we assume that as long as they're about four amas away, they're called meruchaka. It's not likely they fell off it. Now all of a sudden we're saying unless there's a mound in between, they can have fallen off it if they're four amas away. Yeah, so it's like we're completely. Yeah, the Gemara discussion is inconsistent. So because of that, and because of some other problems with it, so Tosfos has a different understanding about it. First of all, the goiva over here is that not necessarily something that would completely block the stones.
From rolling,
right? I mean, it's a little bit of a rise. It's a little bit in the way, but not completely. So therefore that can make a difference. So therefore, tfisa achas again would be that there's no mound in between. So even though it's within four amas, and even though you only have two, Rabbi Shmuel is going to say that if you find two, then that can still be considered a miraculous cotton. One wouldn't be a miraculous, but two already would. In other words, Tosfos learns, when does Rabbi Shmuel say two are mutter? Is if you have that, again, you have a goiva, as you said in the Gemara over here, you have a mound in between. Therefore, it's not, usually, Tosfos learns, if there's a mound in between, between the main miraculous and the new stones that you found.
Uh-huh.
Rashi is learning that the mound is just there for, we're talking about it as a practical thing. Does it allow the stones to roll or not? Tosfos learns that if there's a mound in between, this that Rabbi Shmuel is saying, they would build a new miraculous next to an old one, they would only do that, they wouldn't do that normally if there's a mound in between. Or at least if they're going to, they would start with three stones. So to use two stones to make a new miraculous where there's a mound between it and the old one, that they wouldn't do. Because like symbolically, as if like the mound would divide them, and therefore this new one is not a real miraculous. So three stones are going to be also regardless. Because even if there's a mound in between, because that could be the beginning of a new miraculous, and Rabbi Shmuel holds that they'll do that. Two could also maybe constitute a new miraculous, but only if there's no mound in between.
Is it a way of building?
What?
Is it a certain way of building, or is it
three stones? No, that's the Gemara's going to ask now, in a second. The Gemara's going to ask that usually the stones have to be one here, and one on top. Rabbi Shmuel was saying three next to each other. How does that constitute a miraculous anyway? That's what we're going to get to, and that we're going
to
get to now.
It doesn't have to constitute a miraculous.
Again, according to Tosfos' last explanation, that when you have a miraculous cotton, according to Tosfos, what it comes out, there's two kinds of miraculous cotton. There can be one that's made out of two stones, and there's one that's made out of three. One that's made out of three, they'll make, according to Rabbi Shmuel, regardless whether there's something separating between it and the main miraculous. And
three, one on top of the other. I mean,
not even one on top of the other. Like I was going to say now, even they're one next to each other.
One next to the other.
One next to each other. But if they only have two stones, they're only going to make a new Merkulos out of it if there's no mound or other separation between it and the main Merkulos pile. That's how the Bishmal was going
to
look.
Mound.
So according to Tosfos, the point is, the mound is, we're not even talking about, we're not even talking about a mound that physically prevents the stones from rolling. Whatever it would be, however much it would be, to be considered significant. I don't know, Tosfos doesn't give a figure. At least not that I know. Okay, so again, I mean, Allah is not like Rabbi Shmuel anyway, but as far as Rabbi Shmuel's opinion, okay, so you'd have to figure out how big is a mound relative to the original Merkulos pile? Is it like, can it be something that said that like it divides the new one from the old one or not? Really, yeah. Okay, fine. So now the question
is a ditch.
I guess that would probably be the same thing as a mound. Maybe I don't know.
A hole in the ground.
Maybe. I don't know. No, I don't know. According to Tosfos' Shita, that they wouldn't take two stones and build a new Merkulos next to an old one across a mound, and maybe they wouldn't across a ditch either. I don't know, maybe. Okay. So the question is, Merkulos Kai Gavna Mihavi? What are you telling me, Rabbi Shmuel? You find three stones next to each other and you're concerned that it's the beginning of a new Merkulos? That's not how a Merkulos is made. V'hatanya, we learn in a Braisa, Elohein Avne Beis Kulis, the following are the stones of Beis Kulis. Achas Mikan, Ba'achas Mikan, Ba'achas Agabe. Yeah, and that I'll explain in a second what Tosfos says, why here we're calling it Kulis, where everywhere else we're calling it Merkulos. But what are Avne Beis Kulis? And the relevance of this Braisa that we're quoting over here actually comes from Bava Metzia, we're talking about, so we know we learned from Bava Metzia and Ela Metzia, if you find coins in the street, normally there's no simon on coins. However, if you find them in certain configurations where it shows that the person probably put them there deliberately, then you have to announce them because that's a simon. One of them is, if you find them, like Avne Beis Kulis, if you find three coins, one, two, and a third on top of them, then that would be like Avne Beis Kulis, and that's a simon, yeah.
They cannot get on top of themselves. So
the question is, so that's the only configuration, not when you have three next to each other. So why is Rabbi Shmuel saying in our mission you find three next to each other, and we're concerned that it's a small Merkulos?
Right.
The answer is, Omar Rabbi, Tanya Ahi, the Iker Merkulos. That's talking about the original Merkulos. The main Merkulos is going to have to be composed of a configuration like that. One to the right, one to the left, and one on top. When they're building a secondary Merkulos next to the first one, which according to Rabbi Shmuel they will do, they might even do it by putting three stones next to each other rather than in that configuration. And therefore Rabbi Shmuel was saying it would still be a problem.
If it's what?
Okay, again, Rabbi Shmuel has said in our Mishnah that you find near Merkulos, you find three next to each other.
Yeah,
one, two, three. It's awful. So the question is why, if Merkulos consists of like this? And the answer is, when they're building an original Merkulos, they will only make it like this. But when they're building a secondary Merkulos, and if Shmuel holds that they could build a secondary Merkulos near the main one, then they could do it like this also. So therefore, so the Braisa says Elohein Avne Beis Kulis, meaning this is how they construct a primary Merkulos. Rabbi Shmuel, and our Mishnah, is how they talk about how they construct a secondary Merkulos. Okay, so why are we saying Kulis? What's this Kulis and Merkulos business? So Rashi, not Rashi, Tosfos says, the real name of the Avodah Zarah actually was Kilos, which means Kilos is a word in Hebrew that means praise. We know we don't call Avodah Zarah by its real name. We use a derogatory name for it wherever possible. So the Chachamim did two things. First of all, they turned the word kilos into kulis, which means just the opposite of praise. It means making fun.
Right.
Tosfos relates it to the word lag vakelas in Tehillim. Second of all, they added the mer. Mer means the opposite, or the substitution. So Merkulos means we're substituting for reversing the kilos, the praise that they praise their Avodah Zarah. We're making it Merkulos. We're turning it around and making it into an object of mockery. And that's why we usually call it Merkulos, but in this Braise over here, we call it
Kulos. If you reverse what's reversed, you make
No. The point is, it's two things. We're saying we did two things. We reversed the kilos and turned it into Kulos.
Okay.
So therefore, in our Braise, it just calls it Kulis. Everywhere else, we call it Merkulis to indicate that that's what we did. We're not just calling it Kulis because we mixed up the vowels. We're calling it Merkulis because we deliberately did it. Yeah.
Okay.
No, not because we're scared, because you're supposed to call it a desire by a derogatory name. Yeah. Okay. By the way, the Mephoshim have an interesting question. Bechlal, we know you're only allowed to mention the name of an Avodah Zarah that's mentioned in the Torah. Merkulus is never mentioned in the Torah. How are you allowed to mention it?
We
learned in Sanhedrin that when you have an Avodah Zarah mentioned in the Torah, like Baal or Pa'ur or whatever, you're allowed to mention it, but otherwise
the ones,
you're not really supposed to mention them by their proper names, right? You're supposed to, again, you're supposed to be Mechana then. So again, that's part of the answer over here. The very fact is that the original name was not cool, it was Kibbutz, and we're changing it to Merkulus, that makes it allowed. There's another explanation also that practically speaking, when you need it for learning purposes, and you're allowed to, like this, we couldn't really discuss it sensibly without naming it, so therefore we have to.
Lag Vakelis,
basically, yeah. Okay. Fine. Beyane Malkochoru, the Gemara tells a case, the house or the palace of King Yanai was destroyed. This is in the time of the Gemara, so this is hundreds of years after his time. So his palace was destroyed. Also, certain goyim came and built a Merkulis in the rooms over there. Also, then other goyim came along who did not worship Merkulis. They took those stones of Merkulis and they destroyed it, which they took them. The chifu behem zerachem v'stautoi. And they use these stones to pave streets and roads.
Wow.
Jerusalem is regular, roads. Startoid means like intercity highways.
So what's the question?
So the question is, are you allowed to walk on that highway? Are you allowed to walk on that road?
Well, so
there were some Rabbanon who stayed away and would not walk on these roads because they held that maybe it's not a full-fledged bittul. The Iker Rabbanon, the Leif Haushi, and then there were other Rabbanon who didn't, and held, it is definitely a bittul. They held it, it's also Bahana, right. Again, because we said before that a Merkulis spontaneously often falls apart, so therefore you could argue that not necessarily, just because the stones
are made to pave a road.
So the halacha is like the second one, you don't have to avoid it, because, and you actually have, there's a Machlokes Rishonim, is it as soon as they take the stones away it's bottle, or is it only once they use it for paving?
Once they use it for
paving. No, so you have two different opinions among the Shrek. There is a Rashi, I think, holds. As soon as Rashi earlier, when we talked about this case in previous paragraph, Rashi learns as soon as they take them out of the pile, then already those stones are busted. It's because the equivalent of destroying an Avodah Zarah. The Rambam holds only if they actually use them for paving. Anyway, the point is once they're used for paving. Well, yeah. So the fact of the matter is they are mutter, but nevertheless we're saying that there were some Rabbanon who stayed away from it. However, Amar Rav Yechanan, but Rav Yechanan says, why should we have to stay away from it? What could possibly be the problem? The son of holy people walked on such roads that were paved with stones from a miracle. Should we be staying away from them? Is he, who was a Bnon Shok Doshim, which the Gemara is going to say in a second, why he's called that, because he stayed away from even a trace of Avodah Zarah, and he still walks on such roads. So obviously, that's what we're going to say. Man ninu b'non shokadoshim. Who is this b'non shokadoshim that Rabbi Yechon is referring to? This is Rabbi Menachem b'Rav Simon. V'amai kodolei b'non shokadoshim. So why is he called b'non shokadoshim? Da'afilu b'tzurta nezuzo loy mistakel. He's called that because he didn't even look at the image on a coin. Now, images on coins in those days were often images of Avodah Zarah. Either the emperor that they would declare a god, or various Greek or Roman gods or whatever. So Reb Menachem, Reb Simoy, he would use the coins, but he wouldn't look at the images.
How does he know which coin he had?
Because each one different ones, are different sizes. So he'd feel them by size or whatever, I don't know. But he wouldn't look at the picture on them. So now, Tosfos asks the question, you're talking not allowed to, what's the special to look at a picture of, you're not allowed to look at a statue like that, even if it's not made for worship, even if it's only made for decoration. So Tosfos says, because coins, Tosfos brings from a Gemara and Shabbos that you're not allowed to look at statues, because al tifnu el ha'olim, even they're not made for worship, they're only made for decoration, nevertheless, you're still not supposed to be looking at them.
Elilim is what you worship, not what...
Could even be today's statues, I don't know. The pastures, yes.
But
anyway, the point, no, Elilim apparently, according to the Gemara discusses over there, that biyukna asma, a statue itself, even if it's not necessarily for worship, is something you're not supposed to be looking at. So in that case, then what's the chiddush over here with Menachem b'Rav Simoy, not looking at the coin? The answer is, because something that you see all the time is not subject to this aser. You coins you see all the time. Al tifnu el ha'olim means a statue that you don't normally see. If you have, as you pass by, if you let's say, for example, have occasion every day to walk by Grand Army Plaza, and every day you see the statues there, that would be different.
So
if you go there once in a while,
museum with statues.
Yeah, I'm not so sure about it, actually. It might be that it's a problem. I don't know. I mean, again, if you're Mavatal, then maybe if they were Mavatal, no, but actually we were talking about not even they're used to worship. I don't know. It's a good question. I don't know. Anyway, the point is that
that's the halacha.
So that seems it's seemingly the halacha. But anyway,
you live in a town. No, they have statues everywhere.
It doesn't mean you have to be looking at them. You
but
pass
when
by.
When you drive, you have to see the statue that your grand army plaza.
No, you don't have to see it. You pass by. You know, you notice it out of the corner of your eye. You don't have to stare at it. Also, the scaffold means stare at them.
Staring.
Anyway, the point is. Yes, in that sense, because Zoyma Tavad Azori. So, okay, so anyway, so what's the chiddush of what Rabbi Nachman Rabbi Samoy is doing?
Yeah.
So the answer is, so Tosfos answers, because coins you see all the time, you can't say it's Al-Tifnu Al-Elizim. Nevertheless, he was extra careful about that and wouldn't even look at that. A different answer, other Rishonim do give a different answer. That
gold coins, if you don't
One second. There are other Rishonim who explain that actually the Gemara over there is only talking about statues that are worshipped. Therefore, things like the images on coins, which are not worshipped, would be mutter. I'm not actually sure. I would have to look in Shulchan Aruch myself, because I don't remember which one the halacha follows. I mean, the Pashtos, the fact of the matter is, we do walk down the street and see statues, but we don't stare at them necessarily. As far as museums, I don't know. But again, you do have an opinion that says that Gemara and Shabbos is only referring to Shabbat Azara thing. And therefore, the point is that here, even though they're not, even though the images on the coins are not worshipped, it's still mutter. It would be mutter, but Rabbi Nachman Ber Samoy was machmer on himself. Or, again, according to Tosfos, it would mean that you're technically not allowed to look at them, but when they're on coins or other things that are always around, then you're allowed to. So those are the two different approaches.
What's the
halacha is? I don't know. I don't look and talk about it. I don't have to look. I'm not sure. Anyway, the point is that...
You shouldn't know it's a scroll. It's statues, Roman statues.
I'm aware of it, so that doesn't make it Mutter necessarily.
No.
Okay, anyway, the point that Rabbi Yochanan is getting at is... Even Rabbi Nachman Rabbi Samoy, who was so careful with Avodah Zarah, even to the extent that he wouldn't look at the images on coins, even though technically that's not Osir, he still would walk on roads that are paved with stones that used to be from a Merkulis. So therefore, Rabbi Yochanan is arguing, obviously, it must be completely Mutter.
And therefore,
so that's it. So Rabbi Yochanan is arguing, therefore, that it must be Mutter. So the question is, my time of demand of parish, fine. So what is the reasoning of the opinion that says that it's Osir? If we're saying that even Rabbi Nachman Rabbi Simoy didn't mind it, then why did these Amaroi mind it? The answer is, Savalaki Hodja Amar of Gizel Amar of Chiva Yosef Amar Rav. They argued like this. Up until now, we were assuming that stones that are thrown or placed onto a Merkulis pile are part of the Avodah Zarah itself. So therefore, they can become bottled. But if we look at it not like that, if we look at it as these stones are tekroivus, then that's different. Minayim tekroivus aver is chavim she'en l'b'kei lo elomis. How do we know that tekroivus, that something that's offered, because it's thrown at the Merkulis, and that is the normal way of worshipping it, is by throwing stones at it. Therefore, that would be the equivalent, for example, of shechting an animal in its honor, or bringing it food or whatever, which makes it also b'hana. And not only also b'hana, but also, not only also b'hana, but also that it can't be mivatel it.
Right.
So if we hold that it's the kerevis of a desara, then there's nothing to do. Exactly.
Can you bury them?
Can you bury what? The stone?
Yeah.
You'd have to grind them up and whatever, like you said before, you'd have to throw them into the Yamamelach, whatever, yeah. Okay. So if we argue with Tekrevis Avedis Chavim, Minayim that Tekrevis Avedis Chavim She'en L'Batela Elomis, how do we know that something offered to Avedis Zara can never become Batel? Shenema, because the Pasuk says, Vayitzamdu L'Val Pa'ur Vayichu Zivchemes, and the Pasuk says they became attached to Baal, we quoted the Pasuk a few times, they became attached to Baal Pa'ur, and they ate the korban, they ate sacrifices to the dead. Therefore we learn, Ma'mes E'en L'Batela L'Olam, just like a mess can never become Batel, because a mess is always also Ba'na'ah, therefore also Tekrevis Avedis Chachamim can never become bottled. Now why should that be? It's considered like Mason in that sense. Now why practice should it be? What's the logic that an Avodah Zarah itself can be bottled and Tekrevis cannot? So there's a few different approaches that are taken by different Rishonim and Acharonim on it. One way of looking at it is that the Meiri says it's similar to a korban, just like a korban can never become bottled, neither can Lahavdil a korban to Avodah Zarah. Another way of looking at it, the Taz says, is because unlike an Avodah Zarah itself, which usually has a certain minimum size, they're not, as we said before, they're not going to worship a tiny fragment. Right. Tekrevis can even be a tiny little thing.
Right.
and therefore it can never be canceled. And the Maharshal says an interesting idea. He says, because it's one thing, a statue. What is it? The statue is meant to represent the deity that they're worshipping, but it's not the actual deity itself. It's just meant to be a representation of it, as opposed to the kruvis. You actually, the goy is actually offering it to the deity itself. You have to remember, Avodah Zarah, you know, all this time we're talking about Avodah Zarah involves worshipping statues. Technically, it doesn't. Avodah Zarah could be there's no statue, there's no nothing, but you believe in some power other than Hashem, and then that a person believes in some power other than Hashem and worships it. Even if you have no tangible thing, you can have, for example, a person worships some whatever, some other power. He worships, you know, he worships wisdom. Let's say, for example, you know, that would be Avodah Zarah.
So, he worships religiously, or
that's what we mean. So
he considers that it has supernatural powers.
Basically, yeah. So therefore,
what about money.
Money. That's they say that Avodah Zarah, that money is kind of the modern day Avodah Zarah. Right? No, but they don't sacrifice things there necessarily,
right.
At least not yet. But anyway, the point is, so therefore, so the Maharshal argues, a tekroivus is offered to the actual deity itself, the actual entity that the person is worshipping, as opposed to a statue is only meant as a representation of it. Therefore, a statue can be bought, and tekroivus can. So those are the various reasons that are given why tekroivus, yes. By the way, as far as that previous thing, as far as looking at statues, as far as halacha, as far as looking at statues, So in Shulchan Aruch it just says over here, you're not allowed to look at Noi Elilim, at the beauty of Elilim. And the Shach says what it means is, it's talking about idols that were worshipped. You're not allowed to look at them. So therefore, if they're just made for decoration, then he brings from Tosfos and the Rosh that would be Mutter. So I guess that's the justification for going to museums and whatnot. Okay.
What is that? I'm sorry.
That these statues that you're seeing in museums or in Grand Army Plaza or whatever were never made to worship. They've become bottles. They're just for decoration.
Opposed to what? So the statues of Yoshka?
Those are made to worship. Yeah.
Those are made to worship.
Okay. So now, what about a Mandalay Kodesh? What about then the opinion that says that they didn't hold back from walking on these stones that used to belong to a Merkulis? What are they going to say to that? It's true. If it's the Kroivis, it's never bottle. The answer is, Omar, he argues, yes, but when it comes to Tekroivus, but in a Ka'in Pnim Veleka, what's the definition of Tekroivus? It has to be something similar to what was offered in the Beis Hamikdash. Stones are not offered in the Beis Hamikdash. Therefore, that can't be considered Tekroivus of a desire. Tekroivus has to be something it doesn't have to be the exact same kind of thing. We learned, for example, in the first paragraph that pine cones, for example, can be used as tekroivus. They're never used as korbanos, but at least something that, for example, is similar to food or whatever. Not stones that you're throwing at it. So they would become osir, but they would become osir because they become part of the Avodah Zarah, but they can be bottled.
But they're part of
become part of the Avodah Zarah. They can be bottled like any part of the
Avodah Zarah could be either what was similar to the Beis Hamikdash or is similar to the way that normally that...
Right, so fine, so it'll be osir, but tekroivus, according to this definition, so Tosfos argues with that definition and says that what it means is that it doesn't necessarily mean that. It means rather at least that it has to be fine. It doesn't have to be the exact... Right, so Tosfos learns a little bit differently. The verse is that the Gemara is going to talk about later, that... What are we talking about? One of the avodas that they did in the Mishnah Kishon Zrika is sprinkling blood on the Mizeach.
Right.
But the Gemara is going to talk about later on that sprinkling involves you take a liquid and you sprinkle it and it breaks up into droplets. Therefore, when you have something like this, a stone, you throw it and it still stays in one piece. When it lands, that's not the same kind of thing as what they did in the Mishnah. Therefore, it can't be considered in that sense to create.
But if you blow,
that's not the point. The point is anything that a person is going to be throwing in front of Avodah Zarah, only if it breaks up into pieces, is it going to be considered Zrika. The powder, for example, would be. Later on, the Gemara is going to talk about, for example, we'll get to it tomorrow, or on Matzah Shabbos, Beis Hashem, about, let's say, for example, throwing a stick. A stick also doesn't break into pieces.
So it's not the same.
So therefore, it's not the same. That's the point. In other words, so therefore, that's what Tosfos says. That's why this opinion would say that throwing stones is not similar to an avodah in the Mishnah. Not similar enough. It can still be considered an avodah. Fine. Obviously, a person would be higher for throwing stones to miracles. But you could say that it should be also a tikroi, but that not necessarily.
That's the opinion
that did walk on these roads. Yeah. Okay. Amar Rav Yosef bar Abba, Ikla Rabba bar Yumi al Asrin. So Rav Yosef bar Abba says one time Rabba bar Yumi visited our town, but also, and when he came, but Icy Masnisa Biyadi. Aswin is our place, whoever would be at the Babel is, I don't know, someplace in Babel. But also the Icy Masnisa Biyadi, he came and he brought along with him the following Braisa. Ovid Kachavim Shevi Avonim in Amerikulis, if a goy brings stones from Amerikulis pile, the Chippa Behem Drachim Betarkiyas, and he uses them to pave roads or highways, Mutoris, then the Mutor, because we said before, because the goy was about for them. On the other hand, Yisrael Shehevi, well, right, but if we say that it's not Tikravis, if we say it's just making Korah there, it's making Abadah Zarah bigger, right. Yisrael Shehevi Avonim in Amerikulis, but if a Jew does the same kind of thing, brings stones from Amerikulis, the Chippa Behem Drachim Betarkiyas, and he uses them to pave roads or highways, Asuris. However, now, so he quoted that, he brought that, Rabbi Bar Yirmiyah brought that Braisa. Rabbi Yosef Ba'aba, reporting this later on, says, I don't understand this Braisa. V'leit naga v'leit bar naga d'yifrikine. There is no carpenter and no son of a carpenter, or no locksmith or a son of a locksmith, meaning a Talmid Chacham, or the son of a Talmid Chacham, d'yifrikine, who can solve, who can explain this Braisa. I don't understand this Braisa.
What doesn't he understand?
Well, Omer of Sheshit, Anola, naga.
Sarkius
means highways, like intercity highways.
Omer
of Sheshit, Anola, Nagar, Anovale, Bar Nagar, Anol. So Sheshit says, I'm not a Nagar, I'm not a Bar Nagar, I'm not a particularly great, not, yeah. And still, I understand it predictably. Like, I will explain it. My Kushalay, what is his problem? What does he have a hard time with? Did Rav Gidol? You're having a problem with what Rav Gidol said, and I'm an Aleph, that you cannot be Mavasal to Karevis of Adazara. The answer is, like we said before, Be'indikain Knim Valeka. We can answer, as the Gemara did before, apparently Rav Abba by Yosef did not, Rav Yosef by Abba did not know of that answer. But now that we can use that answer. But in a case Pnim Valeka, it has to be similar to an avoda done in the Bet Mikdash, and there's not, either like that, either according to Rashi, because there's no throwing of stones in the Bet Mikdash at all, only offering of food and other such things, according to Tosfos, because stones don't break into pieces when they're thrown, unlike blood, for example. No, now obviously there weren't stones offered in the Bet Mikdash, but according to Tosfos, that's not the key question. That's not the key thing. Regardless whether it's something that was ever used in the Mishnah or not, it has to be something that breaks into pieces when it's thrown.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, so the point is, so therefore it's not a problem, and therefore that's how we can end for the Braisa. So we're not talking about that these stones are Tikroivis, because if they were Tikroivis, it's true whether a Goy or a Jew took them off the pile, they would still be Osir.
Right.
They're not Tikroivis, because it's not Ka'in Pnim. Rather, consider that when they added them, all they're doing is they're making the pile bigger. They're increasing the size of the Avodah Zarah. Well, very well, an Avodah Zarah can be Nisrasel by a Goy. And it doesn't even need to be, as we said before, in the previous parak, it doesn't even need to be a guy who worships the actual Avodah Zarah. As long as he's a guy who does worship Avodah Zarah, even if it's only a different one, like we said on Amud Aleph, we have this case of the Merkulis built in the ruins of Yanai's palace, where other guys who don't worship Merkulis took it apart, and we said that's a valid vessel. But therefore, so that works, and that's how we can say that if a guy breaks it apart and uses it to pave, then it's mutter. Again, like Rashi says, once they take it out of the pile, like the Rambam says, only when they pave with it. Either way, it's bottle, because it's not Tikravis, it was part of the Avodah Zarah, and now it's no longer part of it, now it's bottle. That's what we're saying, it doesn't matter. That's what we're saying, it doesn't matter. If you have... No, stop. As long as the second guy worships Avodah Zarah, we don't care whether he worships this particular Avodah Zarah. That's what we said. We said that you had some goyim who worshipped Merkulis built this pile in the ruins of Yanai's palace. Later on, other goyim who are also of the Avodah Zarah but who do not worship Merkulis, they took apart this pile. That's fine. It's still fine. One goy who worships one Avodah Zarah can be Mavasal and Avodah Zarah that... Doesn't matter. One guy, as long as the guy is over the Avodah Zarah. So now, a Muslim, for example, cannot be Mavasal Avodah Zarah because he's not over the Avodah Zarah. According to the opinions of Rishonim, there are Rishonim and Achronim who argue that Christians are not over the Avodah Zarah. They couldn't either. And they have some Rishonim and Achronim argue that Goyim are allowed Shittur for various other grounds like that, so therefore they argue that maybe they're not considered full-fledged over the Avodah Zarah. So then, according to that, they couldn't be Mavasal either. And if you have an individual guy, if you have, for example, a Gira Toshav, can't be Mavakal of a Dazar either, because again, he doesn't worship it. Yeah.